Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gary Weiss, a journalist and author of two books probing the underside of finance, Wall Street versus America and Born to Steal. He was an award-winning investigative reporter for Business Week, and his articles have appeared in Condé Nast Portfolio, Parade Magazine, Salon, and The New York Times, among other publications. His latest book is Ayn Rand Nation, The Hidden Struggle for America's Soul. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gary Weiss.
Hi there, Ian.
And Gary, it looks as if the Tea Party caucus have all but shut down the Congress. They have they're coming back on Sunday, apparently. That means, of course, that unemployment benefits won't be renewed, and the payroll tax isn't now in limbo. And it looks as if Bain has had to do this because he can't get the Tea Party to make any agreement before the so-called fiscal cliff deadline, and they won't. The Senate's basically handed them something they don't want to touch. My understanding is that the reason why Boehner can't get a deal, and he was humiliated recently when he tried to do his so-called Plan B by the Tea Party caucus, that the Tea Party types basically are going to let the government go off the fiscal cliff, because then they can come back after next Thursday, a week from today, and say, well, we're not dealing with tax cuts because the tax cuts will have expired. I mean, is it that kind of kabuki we're talking about?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, we're dealing with a completely insane situation in Washington. The public interest is simply, it just isn't even part of the dialogue, at least on the part of the Republicans. And, as I explained in Ayn Rand Nation, and I think a lot of it, this goes back to Rand, there is no concept of the public interest in Rand's ideology. And I think we're seeing that to a certain extent played out in Washington.
Well, it remains to be seen whether the public are going to be sufficiently appalled that they'll take some interest in politics and boot these guys out.
Yeah, that's 2 years down the road. We're stuck with them for 2 years.
Well, but what they seem to have shown, and I did an interview yesterday with the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who'd originally broke the story about Dick Armey's trying to recapture his organization, Freedom Works, and coming in with a gun-wielding aide that escorted Freedom Works' two top employees off the premises. And then several of the women started to sob and broke down when Armey tried to suspend them, and he relinquished them. But 6 days later, on September the 10th, Armey was kicked out with a $8 million parachute, which was given to him by Richard J. Stevenson, a reclusive Illinois multimillionaire who's apparently an Ayn Randian, and he's a founder of this for-profit Cancer Treatment Centers of America. So it looks as though that these organizations, the real question is, how can anybody say that we're talking about ideology here when these organizations, particularly Freedom Works, are so much about what's called AstroTurf? It's multimillionaires basically hiring congressmen to do their bidding.
Well, yeah, I think that's definitely what you have. But I think that you have to take a look, though, at the ideology of the multimillionaires, as you point out. The ideology that these people have very largely adopted, and you're seeing this sweep the country, is the Randian ideology, and it's a complex ideology that is designed to defend and to justify, to provide moral justification for greed and selfishness. And I think it's no accident that a man like Stevenson is, in fact, a Randian acolyte going back many decades.
Yeah, well, apparently he goes back to actually having gone to her lectures, right? Her seminars, right?
Yeah, he went to her seminars, and he's a dedicated Randian. He's not that active on the Randian circuit, but he was co-executive producer of this horrific Atlas Shrugged movie that just came out recently that was panned universally. He was co-executive producer, which means that he put up the money for the movie. So he's definitely out there. He's willing to put his money into that bomb You know, he's also willing to put his money clearly into FreedomWorks. You know, obviously they're both of a kind. They're both designed to advance the ideology, which you know, as you point out, it's selfishness. It's designed to advance the billionaires' interests, and that's why it's no accident that a man like Stephenson is very active in the Randian movement.
Well, I know an actor who was in that movie, Atlas Shrugged, and apparently the backers, the money man, and presumably it was this guy Stevenson, drove the poor director crazy because they were so literal about the text of Ayn Rand, as though it was the sacred scrolls, you know. And if it said in the thing that the main character was wearing a red tie, and if the actor showed up with a blue tie, they had to send him back to wardrobe to get a red tie.
Yeah, I mean that's the irony of that movie. You know, it's supposed to be you know, a commercially viable product. You know, these people are capitalists, and yet they made it impossible for an actual audience to enjoy the movie. So these are capitalists acting in a completely non-capitalistic fashion. You know, putting forth this propaganda.
Right. Well,
that no commercial value at all.
Well, but so let's try and pin this down then, Gary Weiss, again, journalist and author of two books, Probing the Underside of Finance, Wall Street versus America and Born to Steal. And he was an award-winning investigative reporter for Business Week. And his latest book is Ayn Rand Nation, The Hidden Struggle for America's Soul. So in trying to understand the ideological underpinnings of the Tea Party, now the people who back them obviously have what Clinton used to call a dog in this fight, don't they? I mean, they're the ones who benefit, the Koch brothers and the Stevensons and others. They directly benefit from the kind of legislation. But how could this Tea Party organization that supposedly came out of outrage that was felt in the country about the bailout in 2008, how could they turn from right-wing populists into slaves of the oligarchs?
Oh, I think it was actually a natural progression. I think what you have is you did have a certain amount of grassroots dissatisfaction, but the people of the Tea Party became, I think, in effect, tools of these right wing oligarchs and tools of ideologues within their movement who were active in the Ayn Rand movement. I discussed that in my book how people like Mark Meckler, who is also another very prominent Tea Party leader. He became a leader of the Tea Party, of a different Tea Party organization. Actually, it's no accident, I think, that the Randians are so active with the Tea Party, either as financial backers or as leaders, because the whole point, really, of the Tea Party at this point, the way it sort of morphed. It morphed from, I think, sort of genuine outrage at bailouts, which I think a lot of us feel, into an effort to just get another right-wing political effort to justify the perks of the ultra-rich. And the ideology of the ultra-rich is the Randian ideology.
So how does this tie in then with the libertarian wing of the Republican Party? If these are just a new rebranding of the far-right Republicans, or is there a new strain coming in there of the libertarians?
Well, I think what you're seeing is indeed a new strain. You know, the libertarians originated in the 70s. It was, in fact, almost it was like almost a sort of a left wing movement in many respects. You know, the old, Brand herself called them the hippies of the right. You know, these are people who believed in freedom, and you know, I think we can all associate with that. You know, freedom to smoke marijuana, freedom to live the way you want. I mean, that's the libertarian movement in its pure sense, the way it originated in the 70s. But what you had was that the Rand movement, which, as I say, it's a complex philosophy, basically designed to justify greed and self. The Rand movement began to sort of take over the libertarians to the extent that today the Cato Institute, which is a major libertarian think tank, was very recently taken over by a Randian ideologue named John Allison, who's a former chief executive of BB&D Corp, a very active Ayn Rand acolyte. So here you had a very serious libertarian organization going back many years is now basically almost a Randian organization. Now, the Randians and the libertarians used to be sort of at odds for various reasons, and now you're seeing that they're sort of merging, very slowly kind of merging, to the extent that now libertarians are just reflecting the ideology of greed of Ayn Rand.
Well, apparently that's what happened with this fellow that was reinstated in the coup by after the failed coup of Dick Armey to take back his organization, where he came in with his gun-toting aide and tried to fire this guy Matt Kibbe and the other guy Brandon, and apparently. Matt Kibbe is a libertarian as well as a Randian who is close to this fellow Stevenson, Richard J. Stevenson, the reclusive Illinois millionaire who's basically gave the $8 million golden parachute to Army for him to get lost, you know. So that's two organizations that they've taken over, right? Cato and FreedomWorks.
Yeah, in effect. I mean, Stevenson is not quite the Randian, you know, the sort of very prominent Randian ideologue that John Allison is. John Allison is like a Randian thinker and author, as well as a retired CEO of this and financier of the Randian movement. But he's still nevertheless very prominent in the Randian movement. So now, yes, we have two Randian organizations in effect that don't appear on the surface to be Randian, but they are Cato, the libertarian, and FreedomWorks, the Tea Party organization.
And they've got at least one senator who's a Randian, right? Who happens to be called Rand.
Yeah, well, Rand Paul.
I mean,
the son of Ron Paul. Rand Paul is an admirer of Rand, but I think really the main Randian figure that you see on the political stage nowadays is Paul Ryan. The House Budget Committee chairman, former vice presidential candidate, who went to great lengths to deny his Randian connections when he was running for vice president. And it was just a pack of lies. I mean, he just simply tried to rewrite history, and his history was one of a very strong devotion to Randian ideals. And he's now a House Budget Committee, back to being House Budget Committee chairman.
So is this these sort of movements that have merged? And I think actually there's the libertarians, the Randians, and then you've got, you know, essentially you've got free market fundamentalists and religious fundamentalists also merging on the Republican right. So isn't that also a big component of it? Not just market fundamentalism, but religious fundamentalism?
Well, religious fundamentalism, you know,
she was an atheist, right, Ayn Rand, I mean.
Exactly. She was an atheist, and this is where you get into a possible source of tension. You haven't really had too much of it. But a possible source of tension in the right is that, you know, the Rand, and this is the reason why Paul Rand, Ryan tried very hard to disassociate himself from Rand, is that Rand was a vehement atheist. And that's hard this is the reason why William F. Buckley Jr. was very opposed to Rand. You know, he was a Catholic, a practicing Catholic, and Rand was very anti-Catholic. And the Rand movement is so extreme, it is in fact, it's so extreme that it's actually atheist. You know, it has that trait which repels a lot of people in the religious right. No question about that.
Well, and you said earlier that Ayn Rand described libertarians as right-wing hippies. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what she referred to them as, the so-called hippies of the right, which had some validity. I mean, in the old days, they, you know, a lot of hippies, real hippies, and you know, back in the 70s, you know, became libertarians. It was popular among young people back in the 70s. You know, there was an appeal to it. You know, freedom and it was a certain purity to the movement, and it was a very intriguing movement back in the 70s. But Rand hated it. Rand hated libertarians, and you did see a certain amount of that tension between the Rands and the Randians and the libertarians over the years. But now they've sort of put that aside, and they've really gotten to be real chummy lately. And you know, this is what you're seeing.
So,
Cato Institute, Randian organization now.
Well, Gary Weiss, again, journalist and author of two books, Probing the Underside of Finance, Wall Street versus America and Born to Steal. And he's an award-winning investigative reporter for Business Week and the author of An Ayn Rand Nation, The Hidden Struggle for America's Soul. So What's going on, though, in terms, you said that that young people were attracted to the libertarian movement in, during the 60s and 70s, the hippie period, and Ayn Rand called them the hippies on the right.
Yeah.
What about these young people that, that went down to the Republican convention down in Florida, you know, campaigning for Ron Paul? They showed up in droves. Is our young Americans being attracted to this selfish ideology?
Oh, well, there's no question that there's a lot of appeal. You know, extremist, the extreme right, just as, you know, the extreme left to a certain extent has, you know, certainly appealed to young people trying to, you know, who are experimenting with ideas. Ron Paul has had a lot of support among the young, a great deal of support among the young. This is just something that one has to sort of get used to. You know, extremist movements do, whether they're the left or the right, do tend to attract young people. Rand was very popular and is to this day very popular on college campuses. I just appeared on I just gave a speech at a college campus in Texas a couple of weeks ago, and my God, Rand is very strong in Texas, but you know, also in the Northeast, very strong, very popular.
So there's no such thing on the left, is there, as the kind of activism that the Tea Party represents, in as much as they've took over the Congress. They're the ones that seem to have the reins at the moment. They're the ones that are pushing the ship of state over the fiscal cliff for their own reasons. And they're also the mechanism of the fiscal cliff and the sequester was created by a Tea Party tantrum over the debt ceiling. And now the Secretary of Treasury says that debt ceiling has come back a month early. It's going to happen any day now.
Yep.
So they're able to blow the whole government up, and they've already caused the government to be downrated, its credit to be downrated. So they really wield a disproportionate amount of power. Why is there nothing like that on the left? The Occupy movement on the left basically wanted nothing to do with electoral politics, and after all, it was Karl Rove that organized these people in part, and the Koch brothers financed them along with the American Petroleum Institute to take over the Congress in 2010. So they know how to wield power, but is there anything on the left that's even comparable or nascent?
No, there is not. Unfortunately, the Occupy movement failed to organize. The Tea Party movement was very well organized from the beginning. They had, for example, FreedomWorks, which came in, you know, basically a Republican organization, came in and became a Tea Party organization. They had a better sense of organization. The Occupy movement was far too anarchic. Now, if the Occupy movement had gotten a certain degree, had gotten their organizational act together, they might be more of an influence now. And had they been able to get their organizational act together, well then, perhaps then they could have attracted some funding. They had no funding and no organization, whereas the Tea Party has organization, most of which is the most important thing, and they've got a ton of money from the Kochs and from the far right, a ton of money. I mean, look, an $8 million package, an $8 million severance package to Dick Armey? A phenomenal sum of money. It's like, you know, it's like a CEO's golden parachute. It's amazing. You know, how can you call that a grassroots organization when there's that much money being poured into it?
Right, and they poured all that money into Stevenson, who paid off Army to get lost. He put up a ton of money for Joe Walsh, the Tea Party favorite, who lost to Tammy Duckworth, and Army was putting up money for the two senators who had major foot in the mouth problems. Murdoch in Indiana, who was defeated because of his remarks about women accepting children as a result of rape as being God's will, and the other guy, Aiken, saying that the women, female body could shut down in the case of rape. So,
you know, and if you compare that to the Occupy movement, honestly, which was far closer to the way that people actually feel in this country, and they had no money. I mean, they were literally begging for food in Lower Manhattan. And my wife brought down some food for them. I mean, they couldn't even get a meal, much less funding.
Sure.
It was pathetic. It's just pathetic.
Well, there has to be a way for people to rise above money and assert themselves. And I thank you so much for joining us here today, Gary Weiss.
It was my pleasure, Ian. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Gary Weiss, who's a journalist and author of two books, Probing the Underside of Finance, Wall Street versus America, and Born to Steal. He was an award-winning investigative reporter for Business Week, and his latest book is Ayn Rand Nation, The Hidden Struggle for America's Soul. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Dina Racer about her article at Truthout, Slow Rolling Massacre Unfolds in the Shadow of Shocking High-Profile School Shooting Sprees.